This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. As always, my name is Alex Perney, and today we are pleased to welcome on Roger Connect with Universal Accounting, the CEO and president of the firm, a firm that has its roots back in the mid-70s. So we're very happy to welcome you on today, Roger. Thank you so much for being with us. If you don't mind, I always like guests to kind of give us a little bit of a background on, you know, kind of how you came to be in your current position, what your professional background looks like, and then we'll dive into the accounting principles and strategies that we had discussed in our pre-call.
Well, first of all, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity. And yeah, a little bit of history. I've been with the company now for more than 24 years. And so I've been doing this for a long time. And my journey began prior to working at Universal Accounting Center as a headhunter recruiter for accounting professionals. I was actually placing individuals in temporary and permanent assignments. And it was through that experience that I got to become familiar with Universal Accounting, the quality of its graduates, the individuals that it was putting out through the programs that it offered. And I was able to take those and place them in these assignments and found that it was a great relationship for me. And through that, I ended up becoming familiar with the owners, the individuals running the school, and over time was given an opportunity to work for the business, did some consulting initially, and then came on full time. And it was in that process that I climbed the proverbial ladder. In fact, I like to actually say I built the ladder. I decided what wall I wanted to put it against, and I built the ladder and I climbed it to the point where about 10 years ago, I was given the opportunity to be the third president of the school.
Awesome. Yeah, that's it's always interesting to talk to people that have a similar career trajectory as myself, while maybe not as tenured as you are. Granted, I'm significantly younger, but age is nothing but a number. But I had a similar, you know, experience in my professional career of I actually did, while we didn't have a mail room, it was more of a closet. I did start actually sorting mail and just doing check coding and things like that. And 12 years later, I have managed to not anger anyone to the point where I've lost my job and have climbed that ladder as well. So again, always good to have kind of a kindred experience in that realm, if you will. So
Well, don't worry about the age. Eventually you'll get the gray hair like I do. So you'll be fine.
Well, according to my wife, it's already there. Maybe it doesn't show up on camera as well, but the gray hair and everything that goes with it, I think it promotes a sense of experience. That's what I say.
There you go.
And gray is nothing but a color, right? It's the all the colors. White is an amalgamation of all colors of the spectrum.
That's right. Good way of thinking of it.
But we digress. So, you know, a key component of any business is money. You know, things don't run on goodwill and hope. And if they do, they don't run very long in that capacity. And one of the big things to do with business is you don't just take all of your cash and dump it into a bucket. You have to account for things. There's things like taxes, payroll, you know, accounts payable, accounts receivable, tracking everything. And it can get very cumbersome extremely quickly. I think most people would say that, you know, balancing their own personal finances is probably tough enough, but let alone trying to account for all of the ins and outs of a operational business, and whether that is two people selling widgets on eBay or something, you know, significantly larger in scale, the principles and the basis that you have for that are relatively similar. You know, there are economies of scale in anything. You know, you're not going to go be a PricewaterhouseCooper in your small, you know, one-man show car dealership. But the accounting principles and the things you need to understand from a business point of view are all based in some core tenets. And I think that's really what we're going to kind of cover today. So what I would kind of pose to you to start off with is that if you were, you know, and I'm assuming you do this, if you're talking to someone that has come, you know, fresh in the door and says, you know, I don't know what I don't know, but I know I need to know more. You know, what were you kind of start with that with, you know, your principles of strategic accounting that you've coined? You know, where would you kind of start with someone like that?
Well, I'm going to put it into kind of some context here that I think your listeners would appreciate. As a business owner, you're very good at what you do. You are great at either producing or delivering a great product or service. I'm sure you're excited and love talking about it, and so you can market and sell that offering. But the challenge comes with the numbers, and I'm sure there's a phrase that everyone's familiar with. If you've not heard it, you need to be familiar with it, and it's that accounting is the language of business. And because accounting is the language of business, I want you to imagine that your company is speaking to you in a language that you may not be familiar with, but yet you need to find a way to break that barrier down and communicate. And the accounting professional can be that translator, the interpreter that can help you understand what the business is trying to say and communicate. And that's often found in the financial reports, the P&L, balance sheet, cash flow statements. Those are the ones that you as a business owner should become familiar with, or at least have someone help you look at and understand. And so to answer your question, what I do is I actually, for the last 7 years now, I've been working as a business coach, working with business owners and helping them actually work on their business. And that is kind of an interesting experience, because the second phase of our coaching is understanding accounting. And it's where I begin that exercise by pushing across the desk a profit and loss statement, an income statement. And as I put it in front of them, I ask them, what on this report means anything to you? What do you look at when you receive this? What matters to you? What is the number you're watching, and what are you looking for? What do you hope it does? And one of the things that's fascinating to me is how many times I've had that conversation with business owners, and it ranges, but it goes from, I don't know what I'm looking at, I don't even know what to focus on, to at least some level of understanding, but it's, what am I missing? And so in that gamut of, you know, whether or not you're unfamiliar with the reports or you're very familiar with them, there's a lot to be gained from running your business using the numbers. And what we want to do is just help the business owners realize that as you have these reports become your friend, all of a sudden you're able to move up what I refer to as the wisdom pyramid. And in that wisdom, you'll actually be able to make better informed business decisions. And so my first exercise as it relates to accounting is literally starting at that point where the business owner already is. And that's where we're going to start with that income statement, going across the desk and asking what matters. And then that will proceed or be followed by the balance sheet and the cash flow statement.
Great. So I think those are three kind of good places to start with: a P&L, a balance sheet, and cash flow. Uh-huh. All kind of pertaining to relatively similar ecosystems within the accounting realm for a business owner. So from that standpoint, are there different things that different types of businesses tend to overlook when it comes to a P&L? I would say, again, from a very high level of people saying, yes, I understand what profit and loss is, and a profit and loss statement is a statement of those two facts and numerical verification on a sheet of paper or Excel or whatever you're using. So what would you say from, again, kind of going at a high level, are some things that are the easiest for people to kind of wrap their head around of what they need to understand about what that report is saying? Because at the end of the day, I think kind of what you're getting at is that all of these different things speak a different language. They speak something to you as a business owner about what is actually happening with your business. So what exactly is being spoken to by the P&L, again, on a high level?
Yeah, well, I'm going to give an analogy here to help illustrate this point. So imagine, for example, you have health issues or concerns, and you're going to the doctor, and you go in and you have your x-rays done, you have your blood tests done, and the reports come back. You've got the x-ray image, you've got the toxicology or the blood report or whatever it is, and you're looking at this information. And if you're like me, I don't understand these reports. I can't look at an x-ray and understand what it's telling me. I can't look at a blood report and understand what it's telling me. I see information, but it means nothing to me. I can't interpret it. Well, it's the same as a business owner looking at these reports oftentimes. We have to understand that our bodies are trying to communicate something to us, because there's pain in my knee, and we x-rayed my knee, and I know it hurts, but I don't know why, and I don't know what's going on. And great, there's this image here that we can look at together, but until somebody who understands what that image is displaying is able to communicate to me, oh, it's a torn ACL, it's a torn ligament, it's a muscle strain. I don't know what it is, but the point is until someone who understands the report can come in and help explain what the pain is that I'm experiencing, then I don't know how to actually take care of it or actually improve it. I can't explain, do I need surgery? Do I need rehabilitation? Do I need to put a brace on it? What do I need to do? that's how valuable that doctor is to that x-ray or that doctor in reading the blood blood report to understand what's happening in my body. I feel sluggish. I feel tired. I feel something. And all of a sudden, they're able to come back and explain that you have this going on in your blood. That's powerful. And the same is true when it relates to accounting. Accounting is actually now the business trying to communicate what's happening in the company, even though we're experiencing it on a day-to-day basis, but in numbers. And it's a way that the banks, the venture capitalists, you know, the investors, it's a way they're looking at the company. They're not there on a day-to-day basis. They're looking at the numbers. And so what we're wanting to do is a comparison. Where the accountant comes in is they're able to take what the bookkeeper prepared, which are the completed and accurate financial reports, and the accountant is able to now interpret this information and do, let's say, an analysis of last month to the previous month, last month to the same month last year, and they're able to show how things are changing and evolving. And one good illustration of this is cost of goods. With inflation changing like it has, one of the things that business owners have experienced is this cost of good going up for them to be able to provide the product or service that they're offering, but the profits are going down and they feel it, but they don't know what needs to change and how much. So as a business owner, I might realize I need to raise my prices and I have to do it, but I don't know how much. But if I had the accountant come in and show that the costs of the goods have changed, say 10% from this year to compared to last year, I at least know my prices need to go up more than 10% to offset this inflationary experience that we're having. I would have known, I know, to increase the price, but I didn't know how much until I got into the numbers. And that's a valuable illustration of how the accounting can be beneficial in making informed business decisions and actually staying ahead of the curve. Because I know if I at least raise it 15%, I've got my margin again. Is this helping?
No, absolutely. Yeah. So understanding kind of the, you know, what it is telling you. But so from the comparative analysis, I think that's probably easy correlation for a lot of people to understand, saying, you know, it's you don't not you know, you're making less money at the end of the day, you're the end of your, you know, the end of that ledger, you know, from the same amount of, let's say you had 2 years of exact same sales, exact same growth, but you have less in your account at that point. Okay, well, we understand things are happening, but understanding kind of the cause factors of that, I think is what you're getting at, of saying, okay, well, the cost of goods increased, or maybe my labor costs increased, my insurance. So whatever is increasing, to understand kind of where you need to maybe adjust pricing and why you would necessarily need to do that, because again, making an uninformed decision would definitely have consequences. You know, if you don't understand the specific reason for that, you're just kind of taking shots in the dark and hoping something sticks. Would that be a fair assessment?
Oh, yeah. You're basically running your business blind. You're not using the information or instruments to make informed decisions. I'll give you another example. You end up doing a price increase. Let's assume that you determined that you needed to go up 10% because of your cost of goods. Maybe it was inflationary things regarding expenses related to shipping and so forth. Well, you raise your prices 10%, but one of the things you neglected to take into account is, although you changed the price on the product, the top line revenue is different, you fail to realize that your salespeople are actually compensated and they get a percent, a commission on their sales. Well, you raised it enough to actually offset the costs, but now they're getting a cut. So you really didn't raise it enough. You should have raised it even more to consider the fact that you're also going to commission your salespeople on that increase. And so you needed to not just go up 10% to offset the 10%. You needed to go up, say, 13, 14, 15% because they were going to get a 2, 3, 4% override on that increase of the revenue that you were bringing in. These things have ramifications that sometimes business owners, we make because we think we know what we're doing, when in reality, we should have looked at the numbers and the numbers could have helped us make a more definitive answer.
What would you say? And that's a really good point that I wouldn't have necessarily have thought. And again, that's always going to be business specific. You know, if you have some type of, you know, increasing, you know, some type of, you know, sliding scale of saying, okay, well, if you increase this, then you also have a consummate increase in another expense, which certainly isn't always the use case, but it certainly can, especially if you have a good that requires a sales force to enact, you're going to be paying sales commissions typically, you know, unless it's just, you know, hardline retail, you know, for the majority of things, you're going to be paying commission. And even that scenario, you might have some of those types of costs. Think, you know, car dealerships probably be a good example. So what would you say from kind of that point, because that's, I feel, a really good place to kind of start the next part of this, is some some high-line issues that people don't realize also go into, you know, trying to fix accounting problems, saying, okay, we have identified that there is this certain problem, whether that is, you know, a decrease in revenue due to the cost of something going up. Like you said, not realizing that you have a sales force that is going to be that's going to be compensated commensurately, and that the 10% just to offset that doesn't get you back to your margin. What are some other things that you've seen that, you know, are kind of in line with that, that people need to be aware of?
Well, I'm going to try and answer this question by going back to the roles that exist in accounting. And this kind of comes to the point of the three core services that accounting professionals offer. What I have found over the years working with business owners is they're not always very clear as to what it is they're paying for when receiving accounting services. They don't know what they should expect of the individuals performing those functions. They don't know whether or not they're getting what they should be anticipating, and is it useful? And so that's a huge disadvantage when the business owner is great at what they do as a business. And as it relates to accounting, they just don't know how to manage the individuals doing the accounting, and they don't know what questions to be asking. The flip side of that is the accounting profession has done a horrible job, in my opinion, of explaining clearly what each of the roles are that we perform for business. And so real quickly, let me just kind of explain these, and I think we're going to come to your answer. The first thing that I'd like to point out is that there's a distinction between accounting and bookkeeping. They're not one and the same. They're two entirely different functions. Bookkeeping is literally the recording of the transactions going on in the business, and it may involve payroll, payables, receivables, but it's all with the intent of creating the financial reports. We're wanting to ultimately create in a timely manner the financial reports to tell the company this is what's happening. Okay. So the P&L, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement, if they're provided within a timely manner, say within 10 to 15 days of the close of a month, and it's accurate information, we're informing the business owner as to here's what's going on right now as a snapshot in the company. Now, we can have a conversation about those reports as to whether or not they're cash or accrual based, whether or not we're looking at fixed or variable items. All these things are things that we can dive into more deeply, but to clearly understand what the role of the bookkeeper is important. They're preparing accurate financial reports in a timely manner. The accountant is coming in, and their role is to now interpret that information, to do as I was explaining earlier, take the information that the business is communicating and put it in a useful context for the business owner to make informed business decisions. As a business owner, what I want to know is what's changing. And I want to look at the relationship between top line revenue and gross profit. What's going on with the cost of goods that are happening as I take in money from my customers, and then I have money left over as gross profit to pay my bills? Well, that's important. And I want to watch that as a percentage to see how is this comparing to say last year same time. If last year my gross profit was say 75% of total income and this year it's 70%, I've had a 5% increase in my cost of goods, and I need to know that. But the next part is the relationship between, let's say, payables and receivables. I want to know what's going on with, let's say, payroll and gross profit, advertising and gross profit, just some of those major expenses that are occurring in the business, to see, are there things that I can be doing as a decision in running the company that impacts expenses that really determine whether or not that money that's in the gross profit is going to end up in the net income, the profit of the business. So those are all things that the accounting professional should be watching and reporting to the business owner, the management team, on a regular basis. And this is where you do analysis based on last month compared to the previous month, last month to the same month previous year, last quarter to the previous quarter, last quarter to the same quarter previous year, year to date compared to previous year, year to date. These analysis and breaking down those various numbers are hugely important to running the company intelligently. Now, let's take it into a tax perspective, and I think this is where you're maybe going to see value. There's a distinction between a tax preparer and a tax planner, somebody that's a strategist. The preparer is helping the business owner actually take the information and file their tax return in a timely way and do so legally. The tax strategist, the advisor, is actually coming up with different approaches to business that, if we implement them, they may mitigate our tax liability. They can help us defer taxes. And if we did certain things a certain way, we could actually save tons of money not just tens, but hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars as it relates to the business in tax responsibility or liability when preparing the taxes. And so those two different roles become very important. And then the last is the CFO and advisor. And the CFO and advisor are where you're getting more of the operational. And so that comes to your question. It's at the CFO level that we're actually getting insights as to whether operationally we're running the business intentionally, such as, let's look at the amount of money we're paying our salespeople, and are we paying them appropriately? Are we paying other individuals in the company appropriately as it appears to the market? Are we paying them based on production? All of these things actually impact one of the biggest things that affects the financial stability of the company, which is payroll. And at the CFO level, we need to be making payroll decisions intelligently, not just giving a pay increase because of tenure, not just giving a pay increase because of the fact that we like them. We need to be intelligent about how we're actually dispersing our compensation. And then the other thing that I would also encourage is you've got your fixed and variable costs. The fixed costs are, regardless of whether or not we sell anything, we're going to have to pay rent, we're going to have to pay for the lights, we're going to have to pay certain contractual obligations that we have. But there's variable expenses like the payroll I mentioned earlier on. When we sell something, now we owe someone something. And if you can, in business, distinguish all of your expenses, just go down the profit and loss statement. Identify in your expenses whether or not this is a fixed or a variable expense. That's very insightful as you run your business to know these are things I have to cover regardless. And that's where I need to know what my break-even point is. How much sales in volume do I need to at least cover my fixed expenses? And then the variable becomes, okay, as I sell, how do these change or become relevant? And all of a sudden you start to understand the moving pieces within your company. So lengthy answer, but did that help?
No, I think it certainly did. And I kind of, my next kind of point that I want to kind of have you elucidate to is a little bit of a change in pace, but it definitely covers the core of what you just talked about is, you know, identifying the need for when to be more proactive on this. Because I think a lot of what you're talking about is great if you are a very proactive CFO or business owner. If you're wearing, you know, the entire C-suite hat, you know, it's, you know, kind of falls to you. So what I'm kind of getting at is what I like to cover here specifically is kind of how people can either eliminate issues or get ahead of them, or if they're having issues, how to fix them. Now, specifically to that, where are some areas, and kind of thinking out loud, that people kind of, you know, get into trouble with this? Because it's easy to say, hey, if you're doing all of this perfectly, if you're looking at your profit and loss statement analytically, or if you're understanding where your accounting is doing that. But what I would imagine people kind of fall into a bit of a trap is being victims of their own success. If your business is, you know, quote, growing year over year, you have made more money on your profit and loss statement than the year beforehand or the 2 or 3 years beforehand. But as it relates to a total percentage growth basis, if your growth basis is going down, if those percentages are getting narrower because your cost of good and everything else is going up, that's definitely something to kind of keep in mind. So how do people, you know, at what point do you see people getting into the most issues, and what are some of the best corrective measures to do? Is it to, you know, step out and hire outside accounting to understand, you know, do you see people not understanding the difference between a bookkeeper and an accountant specifically? Where are some of these kind of issues, and at least kind of, I think what I'm kind of getting at is the mindset of the individual. Where do you see the shortcomings, the shortcomings come in that context of, you know, the business owner saying, hey, even if you're doing well, you might not be doing well as it relates to what you just talked about.
So I'm going to kind of go deep here, and maybe too deep, but we'll try it here on the podcast. The first thing is a lot of business owners, as I've interacted with them, are very good at what they do. I mean, that's why they have the business, and that's why they're perhaps having, as you're describing it, the successes they're experiencing. That's all great and wonderful, and they're clearly adept at what they're accomplishing. However, one of the things that I want to do is say that you can exponentially increase your success when tying what you're experiencing as your gut instincts and your impressions of what you ought to be doing with verifiable numbers. When you can back up in your own mind things that you're feeling with numbers, your confidence goes up even more. And that exponential increase, because as a business owner, you've got the numbers on your side, becomes totally different. And so what I want to talk about is when you're running your business, going beyond just the financial numbers and finding the correlations of those is hugely important. So you were talking about whether or not somebody should bring in or hire a third party to fill these roles. By all means, I suggest that. I would encourage you to have as part of your team running your business to not only have a competent bookkeeper, but especially a tax preparer, an accountant, a CFO. All these roles play an integral part in your success. So let me just give you an illustration that might be of value to everyone. We've been talking a little bit about the profit and loss statement. You've got all these reports and that's just basically numbers. I want to take those numbers to another level. And here's what I'd like to add. Imagine taking and exporting your profit and loss statement into Excel and putting down below the financial numbers some additional numbers that you can then use as variables. So if I was to take and put down on the Excel spreadsheet the number of sales I had of a specific widget or service, and then I also tied to that the number of employees I had, or I was able to put in there maybe the advertising costs, all of a sudden, what I'm able to do is do formulas that go up and actually grab the, let's say, the total revenue and divide it by the initial unit. Well, if I know my revenue per unit, I can know, is my revenue per unit going up or not? It's the same thing with customers. If I divide it by the number of customers, I can see, is the average revenue per customer changing? I'm able to actually divide that top line revenue by advertising. I've spent how much in advertising? Well, my average cost per acquisition for that sell that I got, is that going up or down as it relates to the new customers I'm bringing in? All these things become numbers that I can actually now start working towards. Rather than work harder, work smarter, I can go to my sales team and say, our average revenue per customer, our transaction is, say, $2,000. That's our average invoice. If we could actually come up with a way to add some additional products or services to that invoice and increase the average transaction from $2,000 to, say, $2,100, that additional $100 per transaction could be huge in the business model. Well, I only know that because I was able to do the math and realize I've got a number here that if I can work towards bundling in new products or services, in addition to doing a price increase, all of a sudden, last year, my cost per client, or my average revenue per customer was $2,000. Now it's $2,100. I'm moving the needle. And if I look at my cost per acquisition, my advertising, I used to spend, say, $700 to acquire a client. Now I'm spending $600 to acquire a client. I got rid of some of those things that weren't producing a return on investment. They weren't effective as marketing. I stopped spending the money there and I put it where I knew it was working. So now my advertising dollars are more effective. So my cost per acquisition is going down. My revenue per customer is going up. Well, all these things are things that I'm, as a business owner, able to look at and now make actionable decisions based upon that affect the success of the business. All of these, just moving the needles here and there, all of a sudden turn into profit. And that's what we're trying to achieve.
No, that definitely makes sense from the aspect of saying, you know, looking at numbers is not just kind of identifying a spreadsheet and saying, okay, well, this equals that, this equals this. It's really kind of the correlation effect of saying, hey, what do all of these things individually mean? Whether that's cost of acquisition, cost of goods sold, net profits, accounts payable, all these things. What you're kind of saying with that is that, you know, and I guess forensically is definitely probably the bad term when talking about accounting in this context, but systematically looking at all of this and saying, okay, what can I correlate to this? And then how can we improve each of these things incrementally? Because, you know, anything in business, it's not, there's no such thing as a lottery ticket, unless you do hit the lottery, which in case, great for you. But, you know, it's going to be one of these things where it's going to be 1,000 different individual things that are going to incrementally get you to that number. It's not just saying, oh, well, I can, you know, get rid of my entire sales force and just have everything done through an app on a phone. For the most part, it's going to be those small incremental things of saying, okay, how can we best identify improving this by a small margin and then this by another small margin? Well, these two increases in these margins are going to then in turn drop another fixed expense or a variable expense to a point where now all of these small things are culminating together to make a much better outlook for the business. So from that, I think it kind of plays into, you know, the identification of all these small things kind of all have their roots in cash flow, if you will. So identifying how these things relate to your ultimate revenues, you kind of have to look at where the cash is coming from, I would imagine, correct?
Yeah, cash flow, that's the role of the CFO. And it's a great transition here in our conversation because cash flow is king. right? You need cash to run the business. And I think there's this fool's belief that if we're making money, we must be successful or profitable. When in reality, from an accrual point of view, you can be selling, doing great, but all of your money is in receivables. And a lot of people owe you money, but you don't have money to pay your bills. And so you start floating things and start leveraging various assets that you have in order to have the monies to make payroll. You have Peter to pay Paul in the sense that you make this sell so you can finish this sell. I mean, it's a ridiculous circle that we find ourselves in as business. And so the CFO comes in and really assesses what's going on with our cash flow. Are we acting as a bank and have this gap between payables and receivables that we need to close? And what we're trying to do here is we're trying to change the relationships that we have with the vendors that we're working with. Do we have net 30 terms, net 45, net 10? We want to, as a CFO, actually work with those relationships so that we can extend how often we have to pay or how quickly we have to pay so that we can collect the money, have longer time to get the money from our customers. And if we can actually accelerate how quickly we're delivering the product or service, it means we can collect monies faster. If we can extend how often or how quickly we have to pay in order to provide those services, that can kind of close that gap so that we're getting paid before we have to spend money. But I want to go back to even the customer. The CFO is able to help with, as a business, it doesn't do us any good to take a product or service sale and incur the cost to perform that job function or create that product, do the man hours, but not ask the customer to pay us until we're finished. We have to have them put some skin in the game. And so as the CFO, I'm able to come in and tell the sales manager and the president, unless we're collecting 25, 30, 50% of the monies needed at the time of the sale, we can't actually deliver this because we're going to turn into a cash poor business. And those decisions are based upon information we can see regarding cash flow. And so what we want to do is respect that there's information, valuable information, to make intelligent decisions as to how we're running our business in these numbers. And so cash flow is king. One of the things that I do emphasize is that first and foremost, as it relates to accounting, is cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. Unless you do not have the money, you're just not going to be able to run your business. And who wants to be having these sleepless nights and mortgaging this's and that's in order to stay alive when the customer is paying for a product or service and they should be covering those costs?
No, absolutely. I would say, to kind of further that, what are some of the biggest high level issues that you see? Is that people kind of what things do people typically lose sight of that will start to create cash flow problems? Like you said, you know, mortgaging tomorrow to pay for today, mm-hmm. or, you know, Peter and Paul, whatever analogy you like, insert here.
Of course.
But what are some of the things that you see people losing sight of most often? Or is it kind of an amalgamation of a bunch of different things? But I'm assuming there's probably some high-level stuff out there that people just, again, lose sight of for whatever context.
Oh, yeah. The easiest one I would share is one that I experienced with a client, and it was the misuse of their lines of credit. There's a difference between a line of credit and a business loan, a credit card. There's differences as to when the interest accrues and how much is being accrued. So, you know, you've got an interest rate on a line of credit, which the moment you borrow the money, that same day, interest begins accruing on it. Whereas a credit card, although interest is accruing, it's not owed or needs to be paid unless you don't pay off the balance in full at the end of the statement. Well, I would rather take monies from the credit card with the intent of paying it off in full, because there's interest accruing on a day-to-day basis over here with the line of credit. So I would rather play those a certain way. The business loan that I have also has interest, but I've already been given the money, so I'm paying the interest over time anyway. So I've already incurred that interest. So it's misuse of the lines of credit that we have access to. Which ones should we be using first and when? But here's the biggest mistake I think that's made, is not putting the customer into that discussion. The customer also needs to be paying. They are a place that we can get the means to pay for the expenses we have, because the customer is the one that caused us to incur them. And so we need to also see, like the bank, like the venture capitalist, like the second mortgage, all these places that you're trying to draw capital from, your customer's the same one. You need to be putting at least some burden on them with the transaction so that you can afford the ability to provide the product or service that you have. So bring the customer into that evaluation.
Now, with the context of bringing the customer into it, is that simply just a price point adjustment, or how are you factoring that?
It's not only price point, you know, are you getting paid so that you can affordably provide that product or service? I would dare say there are some products that are loss leaders. There are some products that are not profitable enough and the margin isn't there. We haven't raised prices in too long and we need to raise them now. So there's that issue. But I also want to go back to this concept of the customer pain at the time of sale. There's a lot of times where I work with businesses, and especially in smaller companies, the business owner believes that so much of the transaction is relationship based. And because it's relationship based, they say, well, I can't ask my friend, my neighbor, whomever to pay me today for that product or service simply because of the relationship I have in getting that sale. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to front them the money and I'm going to have them pay me when I'm finished. So I'm going to incur all the costs associated with any of the materials needed to provide that product or service. I'm going to do the work, pay my payroll, and then at the end, ask them to pay me. And it's simply because I saw in my own mind a relationship here. What I needed to do is respect the fact that I have all these obligations. That relationship needs to pay me, and they need to pay me a percent, something that I could use to actually afford the COGS, you know, afford the payroll and provide this without a stress on the business or myself. And that's, I think, a very fair understanding of what it is we should be doing in business, is having a realistic expectation of the customer or client in the transaction. And so too often, I think what's happening is we're not properly burdening the customer at the point of sale, as to they need to have some skin in the game for us to deliver this. Now, obviously, this is industry to industry, and we can have a conversation as it relates to various things. But the point is too often, I think that we're taking the customer out of the equation and assuming they'll pay us when we're finished. And then clearly, you put on top of that a percent of these will go south. And because they aren't favorable, you end up missing income because there's a dispute or something that holds up their ability to pay. And that's a whole nother discussion. And then I'm going to add to it the fact that so many businesses are horrible as to how they manage their receivables. If you're poor at sending out your invoices so that your customers can pay you and know how much to pay you, then shame on you for not managing your receivables effectively enough to get paid, because the longer you delay sending out those reminders and invoices, the less likely it is you're going to get paid. And so what you think is in your receivables, maybe $100,000 or $1 million, well, because you're so lackadaisical about how you manage your receivables and how you ask for those monies of your customer, the longer it goes, the more likely it is you're not going to collect and write off those funds. And so in your mind, you're running with, I've got $1 million owed me, but at the end of the day, you're only going to collect $500,000 of it. And yet you made decisions and spent the money as if you had the million. I mean, there's just disasters all over the place that we can talk about here.
Yeah, and that's a really good point to bring up. And I think it's kind of interesting, you know, getting towards the end of these interviews, of seeing kind of how it all plays together. And the analogy that you made about the, you know, accounting being the language of business, you know, this is, again, how you're talking, you know, this is kind of how it drives the conversation between each of these different facets, whether we're talking about accounts receivable, customer relationship management, you know, accounts payable, business lines of credit decision, are all spoken in the language of the numbers that are produced by the individual, you know, between a P&L, a balance sheet, a cash flow statement, is directly affect how you are speaking and how you are changing these different aspects of business. So to that point, again, being in kind of getting towards the last maybe 10 minutes of what we have to talk about, the thing that I thought was kind of most interesting that you brought up is the customer relationship that really is kind of not something that I necessarily would thought have been, you know, really kind of too much of a factor besides, hey, you know, what can the market bear for the prices that we're charging these people? I think of accounting basically, you know, kind of like a little bit of a walled garden around the business. It's, you know, it's the business's accounting, it's the business's numbers. And, you know, you have marketing that deals with outreach and salespeople that deal with new customer acquisition. But in reality, it's a little bit deeper than that from what you're telling me. Could you maybe elaborate on that? Because I think that's really kind of where I find the most interesting facet of this, is that seems like it's something that would probably be overlooked a lot more often than it needs to be.
So I don't know if I'm going to answer your question, so keep it in mind, but I'm going to attempt to. I think as business leaders, business owners, we tend to speak in hyperboles of work harder, work smarter, work faster, do more, and we're not specific enough. And what the numbers in accounting provide us is the ability to go to the sales manager and say, hey, I've been doing some research and just kind of doing some comparison. And they should already know this, but I'm assuming in this context that maybe the conversation hasn't happened in the past or it's been some time. And you're going in as the president to talk to the sales manager or salespeople. And rather than just saying, hey, we need to sell more and we need to increase our sales, you're able to come in with numbers that say, hey, look, just so you understand, last year, our average invoice per customer was that $2,000 a month or $2,000 a transaction. And looking at everything, we believe that with the prices in pricing increases that we've been discussing and with adding in this additional product that we brought online, we feel that we can actually increase the average revenue per customer up to $2,200. And you have a strategy then where you can have collaboration. You have deliberate things that you're working for. The greater clarity you can bring to the discussion, the more likely it will be achieved. And my point with that is simply to say is once it's clear what's expected, people have a greater likelihood to work more deliberately towards that aim, and they're more able to then celebrate the success because it's not just we're working harder, working smarter, selling more. It's ultimately, at the end of the day, we've moved the needle from our average revenue per customer from $2,000 to $2,100. That was the target. We did it. We hope to do it in 60 days. We're now at 30 days, and we've got that up there. We have something to celebrate. It allows the business to be more intentional and deliberate when we're able to speak not in these abstracts, but in specifics. And we help people really achieve success because they're clear what's expected. And that's what our job as leaders is to be more intentional and deliberate. And I think it allows us to move away from these hyperboles that I mentioned of just work harder and work smarter and really manage the business that we're actually operating. Is that helping?
No, absolutely. And I think kind of to the point as well of understanding, you know, clear, reasonable, and attainable metrics from the standpoint of utilizing accounting to achieve that is really kind of what the takeaway that I've personally taken from this, that I didn't really necessarily think that, you know, accounting would provide. I had a little bit more of an esoteric view of, you know, business operations, but in reality, you know, while I think some of the stuff you talked about is certainly getting into the esoteric realm or just a more complicated realm, I think it also brings it home to the point of saying, okay, well, it's not any type of huge secret sauce. It's numbers at the end of the day. And that really kind of can drive all these other different decisions that really there doesn't need to be this big veil of mystery behind. If you break it down to something as simple as numbers, granted, deriving those numbers can be inherently complicated, and there's a ton of different factors that go into that. But understanding kind of where these decisions can be born from in the accounting and in the, you know, principles of that, I think is really interesting. So from that kind of, you know, capstone to that, what are some other things, again, to kind of bring this in for a landing that you feel are really important for business owners to kind of take away from this of saying, okay, well, we understand that, you know, we don't know what we necessarily don't know. Hiring outside professionals is great. Understanding, you know, that all of these decisions can be born from financial statements and accounting. What are some other directions that people really kind of need to understand at a high level? And obviously, certainly, I would also preface this last statement with, you know, if you are interested in learning from someone who certainly sounds like a consummate expert in this, we'll give you a chance to put out your information in a minute. But again, to that point of, you know, a good, you know, rounded end to this, what would you say that is, you know, important for the business owner to take away from this conversation?
That accounting is your friend. And if you have someone like an accountant that can actually help you extract this type of information from the numbers you're receiving, useful, actionable information, then making business decisions in your business no longer has to be as emotional as it's been in the past. We need to work harder and smarter and faster, and they're doing good. What does good mean? Well, they're doing 10% better than everyone else. They're bringing in $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, $50,000 more than the other salesperson. Getting to the numbers, the exactness of it allows you to speak more intelligently. And so as you're running your business, there's this ethereal, I feel like things are going well, things seem to be going great. Well, the numbers actually give confidence in that sentiment. And so what we want to do is just understand that if you can identify key metrics, key metrics that every individual, every department, the company is working towards, that everyone clearly knows what one thing is that is expected of them. They can either do it or not. They can either be celebrating that success of achieving it or not. And all of a sudden, running the business becomes a lot more intentional. And so what I want to do is just provide that, yes, we all love what we do. We're all very good, perhaps, at what we do. But when you can put some numbers to it, it allows us to actually make more definitive declarations and statements, and we can work towards very specific goals. And that, I think, allows things to be a lot more fun, in my opinion. It allows people to work with better intention and be more purposeful in what they're doing. And as a leader, I want to give my employees the opportunity to be more intentional and purposeful. I want them to work with a very specific objective in mind. And I want them to know how they contribute to the greater good, because if they do this one thing and they do it well, that will actually make a difference in the company. And when I go to a customer service person and I tell them this is what's expected, that one metric gives them a sense of purpose that if I do this well, I'm doing my part in the company. All of a sudden, you get a collective, cohesive group working together because everyone knows what's expected of each other. And at the end of the day, I'm not running people based on feelings and emotion. I'm running the business based on what I refer to as a culture based upon accountability. Obviously, it's a play on accounting, but the point is now everyone is accountable for something specific that they can actually address. And so for that, we actually have, and it's a totally different conversation. It's around a acronym called STAR. It's building this culture of accountability. And it's really where we try to focus on using these numbers to run the business more intelligently. And so if I could end this conversation in any way, I would say as a business owner, the accounting information allows us to get into more actionable things that we can do that will ultimately result in net profit and improved revenues. Those things are what matters, but it's because we're now talking about specific numbers, not just working harder.
No, I think that's a very good way to kind of bring this in for a landing. And again, to the point, I always like to learn something from any of my guests, even if it is in an industry that I'm very familiar with. I'll be the first one to say accounting is not something I'm very familiar with. Again, the more exotic investment structures and retirement plans and tax strategies and all the minutiae that goes into the tax code is where I find my happy place. There's very few of us in here, so it's plenty of cheap real estate.
But well, there's so much to be said for tax planning, just the creativity of how can we legally take the code, the laws, and in running the business, do things that legally limit our tax liability. That's fun. That's creative. And that's something that is very, very much appreciated because it results in bottom line money savings. And that's what we're talking about there. So I love what you guys are doing. And I hope that this conversation as it relates to accounting moves us in that direction, because now we're more intentionally using the numbers to run the business. And that helps us with these tax strategies that you're perhaps implementing.
Absolutely. So Roger, if people want to get in touch with you, whether for professional services or more information, how can they get in touch with you?
Best way, first of all, is LinkedIn. Love to connect with everyone on LinkedIn. It would be a pleasure. Just mention the podcast. I'd be happy to connect there. And then also you can visit us at universalaccounting.com. There is in the navigation free resources, and it's there that you can actually get a copy of this book, Your Strategic Accountant, where I cover what a business owner should be expecting from that accounting relationship that they have and how to better manage the bookkeeper, accountant, tax preparer, CFO with whom they interact. And so if you're actually in a position that you'd like a free copy of that ebook, go to the free resources section, and in the ebooks, just find Your Strategic Accountant, and I'd highly recommend that as a good read for you.
Fantastic. Well, Roger, thank you so much for being on with us today. Again, my name is Alex Perney. This has been the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Thank you for joining us and have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of the Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at advantaira.com and subscribe.